I am Rebecca Michael. Let's get started. This is the Independent Center Podcast.
Yeah. I'm Daniel Ratcliffe.
And we have a guest with us today who's going to come in and talk to us about her journey through her life, which we're actually really, really excited about. So, Holland, do you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Holland Pence. I currently work at the IC with the Veterans in Charge program as the Quality and Support Specialist.
Holland is joined by her sister, Nicole. Nicole, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Nicole Sylvia, and I'm Holland's little sister.
Is it little sister? Mm-hmm. Really? Okay. Little. Are you the middle child, Holland?
Younger middle, because we have two older sisters.
Oh, okay. Wow. Gotcha.
A lot of girls.
Yeah. A lot of girls. Mm-hmm. That was probably interesting growing up with that many sisters.
Yeah.
So, the reason why we want to talk to Holland today is actually because she came to us about some ideas of a podcast.
Yes.
And let's explore those because, you know, what we have found is that when you bring your story to us, we may have a lot of questions because we don't understand it, but it's more authentic that way. So what did you contact us and want to talk to us about?
It'll probably branch out a little bit, sure. But a lot of it was mainly about my experiences with going inpatient for mental health.
Okay.
My start for kind of into the mental health world, as it was.
Okay.
Probably started around a decade ago.
Okay.
And through inpatient, I've been to facilities for with private insurance like Blue Cross Blue Shield and the like. I've also been to like Medicare, Medicaid, and then also there was one stint with when I had no insurance that I've had to go inpatient. So I think I have a little bit of broad spectrum.
You have a really interesting perspective.
And just kind of what went on with there.
Okay.
So
with the three different, I guess, scenarios you've described of one having fairly good insurance with Blue Cross Blue Shield and then standard insurance with Medicaid and then no insurance, could you tell a difference in the type of care that was provided?
Oh, yeah. No insurance was not fun. But also I would say there was one place in particular for when I had private insurance that was also probably one of my worst experiences ever. The Medicare, Medicaid, when I've gone inpatient for them, has been the most consistent.
Okay.
And I would say in some ways the most helpful.
Sure.
Which I was rather surprised with when looking back over everything. Right. For the private pay, I would say it was really one facility in Texas that was probably the worst. I could only go by my own experiences. Okay. So,
sure.
I mean.
So let's start with, where are you from?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
Raised in Arizona.
Okay. Geez, that's hot.
Okay. Oh, well, we were up in the mountains in a very tiny tourist town most of our lives. So we didn't really have the heat of Phoenix. Okay. Although we did visit quite often because of relatives.
Okay.
So
but still the heat of Phoenix, yeah. Just even thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, never been, never will go.
Yeah, you don't want to. It's hot.
You don't want to.
So then, you were. Let's talk about when you started the inpatient. What created that scenario?
I was living in Texas at the time. I had moved out there to be closer to Nicole and her growing children.
To be an auntie.
Yes. And also to just help out in general. There was some not so fun stuff that had happened that I didn't really deal with. Our older sister, she's had a variety of different diagnoses. She also has her own ideas, and stuff like that. So we've had dabblings, I guess, mm-hmm. with mental health before what happened with me. Okay. But it was really, you know, like a new frontier when with mine. Before I went inpatient, I was working at a call center for Harley Davidson doing collections, which is, you know, not the funnest. Yeah. It wasn't hard collections, thank God. No repos or anything like that, but it was, you know, like 3 to 59 day late, you know,
calling people and asking them what's going on. Mm-hmm.
And the shift that they had me on, I was working 4 days a week. Two of them were like 12 hour days.
Oh, wow.
With like a 2 hour break in between, but it was like 10 hours for on work. Oh. I didn't have a vehicle at the time, so I was usually walking the mile and a half to work every day.
Oh, wow.
So I'd already kind of knew that I had depression a little bit.
Okay.
And things just kind of started snowballing.
Okay.
You know, I was withdrawing from my roommate, wasn't really talking to my sister much, you know, just kind of not really wanting to do anything. And then it just snowballed to the point where I started contemplating suicide.
Okay.
You know, then it just, you know, got more invasive to the point where I had a plan completely set up. I had actually tried to get a hold of a therapist before I went inpatient, but their wait time was about, I think, like 2 weeks or something like that before I could actually schedule an appointment to start everything. But it got to a day where I just knew if I didn't go in,
things
were not going to go good.
Right.
Yeah. So I ended up having to call my sister to take me to the emergency room. and then they, after, you know, doing the intake and questionnaires and whatnot, I was transferred over to my first inpatient. I think it was called Sierra Point or something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so... So Nicole was the one that brought you.
Yeah.
So Nicole, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So what I'm curious about is what was your perspective when you got that call from Holland?
It was a little scary because like she said, we had dealt with it a little bit with our older sister, but that was the first time I personally really had to deal with everything. Like, we only had a few details because we were younger.
Sure.
But my mom had always handled the taking to the hospital and dealing with all of that. So that was the first time that I had really done it on my own and everything. So it was scary. Mm-hmm. We weren't, and me being her sister and being younger sister, they didn't give me a whole lot of details on what was going on.
So you kind of felt shut out.
Yeah.
And really worried about how Holland was being treated and taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because her being an adult, and I'm not her mom, I'm just her sister, even though we're family, they don't give a whole lot of details on what's going on and how they're doing and all that. Like, you can go and visit and ask them, but at certain times and... you never know really how it's going, you know?
Right. Well, Holland, so talk to us about that experience. Was that the private insurance?
Yes.
Okay.
I went on to short-term leave for my work because at that point, you know, I thought that, hey, I'd just be able to, you know, course correct and then get back to work, you know?
Right, right.
And that stay was, my first stay was 22 days.
Okay.
And well, like Nicole said, I was also in a different city than where they were. So I think it was like an hour drive for you, Nicole?
Yeah, it was about an hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
To come visit. And with inpatient, especially if it's for suicide, there is, of course, a 72 mandatory hold. But after that, they're, you know, they can essentially keep you as long as they deem it's necessary.
Okay.
If it is voluntary, And you can, you know, of course, leave against medical advice after that hold. But most of the time they try and dissuade you, you know. And then, of course, at that point, I didn't know anything at all going into it. And so when I went in, I think it was over the weekend, but I can't say for sure.
Okay.
The memories there are a little muddy.
Sure.
But I do remember that it took a long time to actually talk to a therapist.
Okay. And
you know, it's like I got set up with a psychiatrist the next morning because I ended up going in there rather late because of how long it took for the hospital to finish processing my paperwork, you know, and to make sure that they had a bed.
Sure.
You know, and then of course there was the drive to the place. So I didn't actually end up getting there until like 9 or 10 p.m.
Wow.
That evening. And then I talked to the psychiatrist the next morning, trying to, you know, like explain what was going on.
Yeah.
And
so the length of stay, 22 days, yes, after the 72-hour hold, you know, what was the process of the length of time? So mm-hmm. were you evaluated at certain intervals and they said, you know, you're not there yet, or we're going to adjust medication, or
not quite. The psychiatrist or doctor on call usually talked to them every few days, you know, okay, just to see how the medications were going and stuff uh-huh. like that. The therapist, though, I maybe saw a handful of times during the stay there.
Okay.
And when I was first going in, you know, I had no clue of what to expect for anything like that. Sure. And so, of course, like the first day I was like wondering, you know, like asking the nurses, hey, when am I gonna talk to the therapist, you know? And there was, and I didn't actually talk to her until I think like 3 or 4 days after I got in there.
Okay.
Did
they give you a diagnosis at that time, or when did they finally give you a diagnosis? And
through inpatient, I went through a kind of a myriad of diagnoses.
Okay.
as yeah, one does.
If I recall, it was a bunch of different ones mm-hmm. that kind of kept changing.
Were they trying to like find the best medication for you, or?
Yeah, it seemed to be. And for the first one, I think it was just major depression and then an okay. undisclosed mood disorder. The second time I went inpatient, when I was trying to describe, you know, like stuff that was going on, they pegged me as bipolar just because of how they thought that I was having a manic episode. Yes. But what was actually going on was, I was, you know, like there was 2 weeks, outside of the first inpatient to when I got into inpatient the second time, and during those 2 weeks I didn't have any contact with a therapist because okay. they scheduled it 2 weeks out
okay
for my follow-up, which wasn't great.
Yeah.
But during that time I kind of got it in my head, you know, the workbook that the therapist had given me, if I finished that, you know, then I'd be able to fix myself, you know.
Oh, okay. So you left inpatient with this workbook.
Yes.
And yeah. then
and a lot of medications. I think I was on like 4 different ones at the time.
Oh, wow.
With
a diagnosis of
just depression.
The depression and this undetermined mm-hmm. mood disorder.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, when I was discharged the first time, it was not an easy transition either. Okay. Because the therapist there did not give me or Nicole any warning at all. They were like, okay, you're getting discharged today.
So there was like no transition mm-mm. from
no
this wow. This inpatient, mm-mm. you know, no. kind of schedule.
No. No. Oh, but yeah, they told me that. They were like, okay, you're getting discharged today. So I had a complete panic attack. As one does.
Yeah.
And then the therapist essentially sat me down and was just like, okay, you have two options. You can either walk out if you're calmly with your family, or you can get a shot and get taken upstate to the state hospital.
Oh my goodness.
I think I'll choose the first option.
Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah, that's
so
the way it went.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
I want to kind of like go all the way back to ask the question of, what was that phone call like? to your sister?
On your end, yeah.
On your end. And then I want to hear it from Nicole's end as well.
It was awkward. And at that point, the depression had gotten to the point where I didn't really feel anything. So, I mean, other than just everything sucks.
Yeah.
And that I felt really bad for having to rope her into this and being like, hey, I need you to take me to the emergency room. Yeah. You know, and I didn't really know how to, you know, like, portray what was going on. Yeah. I just said that I needed to, I don't remember the conversation very well.
Sure.
But I remember, I think I had just said that I needed to go to the emergency room, and I'm not doing good. You know? Man,
that took a lot of strength, and I want to...
Yeah, that is...
Like, just commend you for that.
Definitely. Because not everyone would have the wherewithal to go, I need to kind of let go of the fact that I'm going to loop in my sister, and that's going to be stressful for them to say, I need some help.
Yeah.
So kudos to you.
Self-awareness, man. Yeah. That's important.
Well, I think a big part of it is that I didn't have the money to get transportation to the hospital. I wouldn't have roped her in at all.
Oh, okay. She was your ride.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, and also, I mean, she would need to know where I was.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's kind of important too.
And Nicole, so receiving that call from Holland, what was that moment like for you?
Well, the first time she went in, like she said, she, as I recall too, she just called and said nothing about her thoughts or anything, just that she needed to go to the emergency room and she's not feeling right. My brain went to, okay, she's like stomach, heart, something, not mental right away, because she didn't say anything like that. So I thought it was just, you know, I'm not feeling right physically, like my stomach's upset or something's going on with my heart kind of thing. So when I took her and then we were waiting, I don't think you had said anything in the waiting room either. We were just kind of sitting there. And then it wasn't until we got actually back there and she was talking to the doctors that she had said what was going on, and that's kind of when it hit me. And I haven't dealt with any major depression or anything like that, so I didn't really know how it felt, kind of thing, I guess.
Sure.
So like the first initial call, the first visit, I was kind of oblivious and just thinking she needed to go to the hospital for a different reason.
Gotcha.
And it wasn't until we got into the back room where she was talking to the doctor that I really kind of realized what was going on. And now hearing her talk about it, because she probably didn't want me to know what was really going on, kind of.
Well, I didn't want to worry you.
Yeah.
I thought unnecessarily.
You don't want me to know. It's just you don't want to worry me. And then I'm sure it probably had something to do with watching our older sister go through and... Mom and everything. So
it's amazing how families can tie you up into knots without you even realizing it until something like this comes up and you're like, I don't want to react in the same way. I don't want to, that was stressful enough, and I don't want to worry my family. So that does make sense why you would think that.
Yeah, it does. And I can definitely identify with the depression piece where sometimes it may be, let alone speaking to somebody, it's hard to even get out of the bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And I really connect with you on that level. And I would like to ask, once you were given a diagnosis, and what was that like? Once the doctor says, okay, this is what we think is going on. Was it like a, whew, now let me research this? Or was it a, oh my gosh, type of thing? Like,
well, since the first one was just major depression, it was like, okay, and?
You know? Well, I got that one.
Well, yeah, duh. You know? So, with that first one, it was, it was just more of, okay, and what now?
Right.
With the bipolar It was a little, it was unexpected, but it was like, okay, I've got a name.
Yeah, you know, I can, you have something that
you know,
could,
I can go yeah, a certain route relate. With it. Of course, it was completely wrong diagnosis.
Yeah. But sometimes when you get a diagnosis, you kind of mm-hmm. feel like, finally, I yeah. have an answer.
Yeah. yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. yeah. Especially, you know, like for medication wise, you yeah. know, and then just for also for therapy, I've found, you know, like once you at least know a little bit of what's going on, you know, then you can kind of self-direct stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
So when with the second hospitalization, you said it happened 2 weeks after.
Mm-hmm.
So was that the no pay or was that?
I was still with private insurance at that okay. time, and I was also still in Texas.
Okay.
The main catalyst that made me go inpatient the second time was with my outpatient therapy
mm-hmm.
that the first place had set me up with. We had trouble finding it.
Oh.
And I ended up like 30 minutes late to an hour appointment.
Oh,
I was
wow.
only, I was in full panic attack mode, you know, sure. trying to talk to her. And she was like, you are way too anxious. You need to check yourself in. Make sure you don't go to the same place.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's you know? What a provider
yeah.
told you.
Yeah, that was what she said. So I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So we went to the emergency room, and I just kept on saying what she said. I don't send me back there. Don't send right. me back there. And they eventually took me to the hospital's mental okay. health pavilion.
So then with that, did they give you a different diagnosis at that time?
Yeah, that was when they gave me the bipolar diagnosis. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. With new medications.
Yes.
Wow.
That's our healthcare system.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So then when you get to the second one, you get a new diagnosis, new medication. Mm-hmm. How long were you in for that second time?
I think about 11 days.
Okay.
And then they took me out.
How was that discharge versus the first one?
A lot easier. One, they gave me warning, and then also their pavilion for that hospital, uh-huh. there was a lot less people, and it was a lot more relaxed.
Okay.
At the counselor / therapist that was there, he had a pretty much an open door policy, so I was mm-hmm. able, if there was something on my mind, I could, if he wasn't talking to somebody else, I could go in and discuss things with them.
Nice.
Versus the first place where it was, you had to have a schedule. The scheduling was actually, I found really helpful, because it was like, okay, you've got activities from like 1 to 3, you know,
sure.
and stuff like that. However, the actual therapist was mm-hmm. not great.
Gotcha.
But the second place, the counselor was really nice, you know, mm-hmm. and then most of the, there was mostly women there
okay.
when I was, I don't know if it was separated by gender, but I think there was like 3 or 4 women in the same time, and we had all gotten the same diagnosis.
At the same time?
I don't know. I don't think at the same time,
oh, okay.
but we just all happened to have
the exact same diagnosis.
The exact diagnosis.
Weird. That's very weird.
So, the conversations for, you know, like the groups and stuff like
sure.
that I was in tended to gear towards more of, you know, like the bipolar and
yeah.
Sharing our experiences.
Yeah. So then when did the third, so after this 11-day stay and
mm-hmm.
you transitioned out
mm-hmm.
and you now have the diagnosis of bipolar
mm-hmm.
plus did you still have the same diagnosis of the unidentified or undisclosed or
no, no? I think it was just bipolar and then it was PTSD also
okay.
as well.
So then you get out, you transition
mm-hmm.
out, you're
mm-hmm.
taking your medications.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it from that point
mm-hmm.
do you go in again and for hospitalization?
For that second time, I want to say it was like maybe like 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
I did actually try to go back to work, and I went there for like 2 days, I think, and you know, just stuff started happening again.
Sure.
You know, and then that third time I ended up back to the first place.
Mm.
But since I had been treated inpatient there the first time, they sent me to a different section where the military people were.
Oh.
And for their military side pavilion,
uh-huh.
They also did rehab. So there was people in there for a few months, you know.
Okay.
The military people were actually pretty decent. The the people in there were pretty nice. And then on the rehab side, there was, I think, like a Wii game also that everyone just paid, played like Mario Kart and stuff like that. Oh, okay. So, hey, that was a little fun. Yeah. Yeah.
So then third hospitalization happened. Mm-hmm. How long were you there then?
That one I cannot say for sure. Nicole, do you remember?
That was the last one when
yeah.
we were
yeah, the last Texas, one in Texas.
It was less than a month, but it was more than maybe like 2.5 weeks, mm-hmm. 3 weeks.
Okay. It was once the first inpatient happened for basically those like 8 years was very much a blur.
Sure, sure. Did they maintain the same diagnosis? Or is this a new one, a new diagnosis?
The bipolar state, and so did okay. the PTSD, but that I don't know what was up with that place, but okay. their therapists were not great. Because both of them were women, and then the second lady, she mentioned to me at one point that people were thinking that I was faking it. She got very angry at me because at that time I was not maintaining good eye contact at all. So she would ask me to make sure to maintain eye contact. At that point I had developed a tic of jiggling my foot. Yeah. And she would get angry at that too, saying you need to stop that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's our system.
Yeah.
So after that one, mm-hmm. at the third hospitalization mm-hmm. in Texas, mm-hmm. where did you go next? When was the next hospitalization in what state?
It was in Arizona. After that third one, I was just like, okay, I can't stay here anymore uh-huh. with Texas because I didn't want to continue bringing down my sister, my roommate mm-hmm. At the time, you know, because I just wasn't able to keep up my end of anything sure. at that point. So I had contacted our older sister, Amanda, mm-hmm. Older middle, not the oldest.
Okay. A lot of girls.
Yeah. And she had offered to let me stay with her with a few conditions. Mainly sure. it was, you know, just to keep my mental health in check. That was the main thing. Mm-hmm. And I think when I got out of the third time, I was on like maybe like 6 different medications at that point.
Wow.
Yeah,
because it sounds like they kept adding.
Yeah,
medications.
It was a medication shuffle and add for gosh. Quite a long time. Right.
Wow.
And I ended up having to leave pretty much all of my stuff in Texas. Mm-hmm. My sister and brother Nicole and my brother-in-law ended up having to sell a lot of my stuff.
Sure. So in Arizona, that was your next hospitalization, right?
Yeah, and that was with no insurance.
Okay.
I had tried to get some help a few weeks beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I remember going twice to a kind of walk-in mental health clinic for them. Sure. And when I was on like those 6 different medications, whenever I went in, they would give me completely new medications.
Wow.
Stressed out just hearing about yeah. this. I can't yeah. imagine Definitely. My body going through this.
Yeah. Well, after I think like the second round of completely new medications, I actually ended up having some auditory and visual hallucinations.
Wow.
Just because of the cocktails that that yeah. I was on.
That's realistic. Mm-hmm. That totally makes sense.
But through all of that, were you finding points of growth that where you could look back and say, I am better today than I was some time ago?
During that moments? Particular section, yeah. I would know.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
absolutely not. Gotcha. Except for maybe like just having the knowledge of how to go about the system, sure. you know, or at least what to expect. I thought.
mm-hmm.
You know, and then I ended up attempting suicide by overdose, which got me into the no insurance place.
What did they do with your diagnoses?
They didn't change anything as far as I know.
Okay.
When I went in with the no insurance, at first they sent me to, it almost seemed like a place for people like to sleep off like drugs and like a detox area. Okay. There was a bunch of you know, like people sleeping on the floor and like pallets and stuff like that. And then again late at night, I ended up there.
Right.
In the morning, I ended up switching over to their mental health side. I use that term loosely.
Okay.
It was a
she even did quotation marks for those who are wondering.
Well, it was a converted office.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. There was two, it was probably the most soul-sucking place I've ever been to.
Okay.
There was like four rooms. Two of them were split up by gender for people to sleep. There was like 4 to 6 beds.
Okay.
In each room, there was a back area for food, a front area for people basically to just sit, and then the doctor's office.
Okay.
There was also a small door for us to get fresh air, which was basically, you know, like those, the office ones where you got the high wall and like enough space to put a chair next to the door. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was it.
That was your fresh air.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. People just, yeah.
So at that point, did they change your diagnosis or did they just, I mean, with an attempt of suicide by overdose, you would think that they would really evaluate what medications you were on.
You would think, but I actually ended up looking at my ER notes afterwards, and they thought that I was lying for the overdose.
Okay.
Because at that point, I was on an anxiety med. I think it was Vistaril.
Okay.
You know, which is pretty close to, actually, I found out, was pretty close to Dramamine, to Benadryl. You know, to kind of calm you down. And I had overdosed on that, thinking, you know, for it, you know, it's like you
just, yeah, it makes sense.
You don't really get overdose poisoning or anything like that from Benadryl.
The Benadryl, yeah.
So even though I wasn't showing anything, I did take like maybe like, I think like 15, 20 pills, you know?
Yeah. What was that feeling going, and not to bring you back to that point, but just for our listeners' sake, for identification purposes, what was that feeling going into that attempt? Was it a feeling of like the system had failed you and like there was no good help, and it was like
they just
describe
don't understand
that.
Me maybe or right. Is that working?
Well, nothing was getting better, and I felt like I was just being a burden on everyone. You know, and then with the auditory hallucinations, nothing seemed to actually have, you know, it's like I had, you know, like started trying to get help, you know, like months back, and I was not anywhere better. Yeah. You know, in some ways I was a lot worse, you know, because of the hallucinations and stuff like that, and I was just like I was just done. You know.
Yeah. So with that, how long were you in for this time in Arizona? How long were you in?
3 days. And it was basically long enough for my mom to come down from our hometown in Lakeside to Phoenix. Because she had to wait until the weekend, so I was there for only like 2 or 3 days.
So you were essentially in that 72-hour hold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, just long enough for my mom to come get me.
And so when she came to get you, what happened after that?
I moved back in with my parents.
Uh-huh.
And I got onto Medicaid, and my mother had helped our older sister get onto disability beforehand. So we had at least started discussing me getting onto disability.
Sure.
And then I started going to the counseling center in my hometown, and things started to get at least a little bit better. There was a few hospitalizations, but I would say half of them were because of med changes.
Okay.
That would make sense.
Yeah. I think there was only one that was for suicide.
Okay.
But
that was with Medicaid. So did you find that with Medicaid you actually got the help? Or at least the diagnosis that made sense?
I actually didn't get my correct diagnosis until I moved here back in 2016. Because I was still labeled as bipolar with PTSD.
So then, when you got here...
What was different?
Yeah, what happened that created the aha moment?
Yeah.
It was a multi-step process. Okay. One of the major things was I went through EMDR therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great therapy, by the way.
Yep. Yeah. Been there. Totally mm-hmm. loved it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Because before the EMDR, I was getting triggered multiple times per day. You know, it's like I couldn't like handle like noises up to a certain pitch or volume. Mm. I was not comfortable around people in any space. Sure. And like even just trying to do tasks were just way too overwhelming. Yeah. But after being able to go through the EMDR process, I was able to manage things a little bit better.
Nice.
And then around that time, my brother-in-law ended up getting stationed here in Colorado Springs.
Oh, cool.
And my parents, with our hometown, there wasn't a lot of options
sure.
for really anything for either jobs or
treatment or anything. Yeah.
Well, that's the EMDR counselor was really great, and then the psychiatrist that I was helped with, she really tried her best.
Sure.
So when my brother-in-law got stationed here, me and my parents basically decided that we were going to move over here. Cool. And it was a multi-step process.
Sure. Yeah. So then what diagnosis did they finally land on that that makes sense?
I'm currently diagnosed as autistic with major depression and PTSD.
And do you feel like you got the answer? Like that makes
yeah.
sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Nice. For my autism, it explains a lot of my social anxiety.
Sure.
And just like how difficult it can be for communications and stuff like that. The PTSD, yeah. I definitely understood from the get-go, especially from with my first few hospitalizations, definitely added to the PTSD. And the depression, essentially the same thing, you know. I mean, it just kind of piggybacked off of, I'd say all three of them kind of overlap a lot of, you mm-hmm. know, like my more nitpicky issues. But yeah, since that has been a lot helpful.
Holland, I'm trying to remember, when did we meet at the IC?
Mm-hmm.
Was it 16. It was 16.
Mm-hmm.
I just want all of our listeners to know when I first met you, Holland,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that we would be right here. Like,
talking. Yeah, definitely not.
And I've seen the growth from when I first I met your mother,
mm-hmm.
and then meeting you and working in our office, and, mm-hmm. and you were just so shy and just like this.
Really?
This is a totally new Holland that mm-hmm. you can just see the growth and the drive and the comfort
mm-hmm.
that she has. And I just want to say, like, I loved watching this growth mm-hmm. in you. It's a wonderful amazing. Thing.
Yeah.
It's a very wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that you're here with us today.
So when did you start at the Independent Center? Because you were an employee mm-hmm. of the Independent Center.
Yes.
So what did that look like?
Well, it was definitely unique. I don't think anyone else can say that they've had the same journey with me. So when I moved here, mainly just to be able to, you know, like live outside of my parents' shadow, as it were.
Sure.
I knew that I had to at least try and go through employment. So I got in contact with my mom working at the Independent Center at the time.
Oh, okay.
She had talked to me about the DVR program.
Okay.
And I got connected with one of the counselors there, and they transferred me over to doing an assessment, essentially,
uh-huh.
to see where my strengths would be.
Uh-huh.
And that got set up at the IC with the employment department at the IC. Yeah. Went through that for a few weeks because at that point, I had been unemployed for quite a few years, and I was really nervous going back into working, and I wanted to make sure that I could handle it, and that I'd be able to actually, you know, work properly.
So, in an environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After the assessment, I got set up to do a paid work experience, and that was when I when I met Daniel and Michelle Kirby, who was working in the benefits at that point.
Yeah, who now you work with on the VIC team.
Yes. And basically just started helping with data entry, you know, like converting their medical records, you know, and answering phone calls and stuff like that. Did that for about 3 months. Okay. And at that time, my current manager was overseeing benefits and employment at that time.
Yep.
Okay. And I guess she liked me because she ended up, after my paid work experience was done, she hired me on for billing for the Veterans in Charge program.
Wow. That's quite the responsibility, especially working with the VA and then you know, hours and negotiating through all of that.
Yeah. The VIC program was definitely a lot smaller when I had started. It was, it only needed like 30 or 40 veterans.
Uh-huh.
And it was getting to a point where Marcia could not do the billing by herself anymore.
Drowning.
Yeah, yeah. So I got...
It was something like that.
Yeah, a little bit. So I got hired on for that as a temporary. Then absorbed by the finance for...
Was it absorbed or was it stolen? Let's just call it out.
Probably a bit of both.
Okay.
Because I was still doing the Veterans in Charge group, but it also ended up...
I'm pretty sure it was based off of your talents and your abilities, why they saw the value.
Yeah. And I ended up helping out home health as well for making sure the authorizations were correct. And then once they ended up phasing out... my position to just somebody who does billing for both home health and VIC. Marcia brought me back onto the Veterans in Charge program with the position I have now, and that's been for a few months now.
So. Let me ask you, how has the Independence Center impacted your growth?
Well, it's been immensely helpful. With being, this is by far the longest job I've ever held. I just recently, my 2 year anniversary, at least for being on the IC paperwork. I mean, if you had the paid work, if you had the paid work experience, I've been here for about maybe 2.5 years.
Nice.
Being able to work this consistently, and also how understanding everyone's been, you know, like, being able to, you know, take a mental health day because just things are not going, the winds aren't blowing the right way, you know? And also the flexibility for my schedule, them being open to that, you know, has been extremely helpful as well.
Yeah. Sister Nicole, watching Holland go through the experience of coming to the Independence Center, have you seen, like, growth and change, and if so, just speak on that a little bit.
Oh yeah, immense change. Like, if we were talking about like where we thought she would be during that those hospitalizations in Texas, we obviously hoped that she would get to this point, but I don't think I would have never imagined it's immense growth.
Great.
Just seeing the changes is really amazing, and we're all extremely proud of her. After those hospitalizations in Texas, I was really worried and wasn't sure she would be able to, just from going through all the medications and everything and not getting the right diagnosis and everything. But now, like she said, this is the longest job she's been able to hold. She has her own apartment. She's done amazing.
She talks more now.
Yes, yes.
We used to just get the laugh. I used to like making Holland laugh because she has a very unique laugh.
Between, since she started working there, she, like she was saying, she, being around people, even family, was kind of difficult for her. And now, even though we've moved away, she always calls the kids. She talks to them at least once a week, if not more. She's constantly calling. She keeps up with us, and it's really nice.
That's wonderful.
She's a good aunt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great person.
They get very excited when she calls.
Well, Holland, thank you. I mean, I want to make sure that I express not only gratitude for, you know, taking that leap of coming in and saying, mm-hmm. I have a story, mm-hmm. and I think that it'd be valuable to mm-hmm. to talk about it, but mm-hmm. trusting that we would be able to hopefully, you know, convey your message and, right. and allow you to speak about it in a safe environment. I really, mm-hmm. I appreciate, you know, the trust and,
yes.
and how the story is just...
It's powerful.
Yeah. And, yeah. you know, I just know that, you know, when you transition from finance into Vic this second time,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was such an excitement, like true mm-hmm. excitement that you're going to be able to kind of help out and, yeah. and help keep this growing ship of mm-hmm. Vic straight and, you know,
yeah.
you know, keep everybody accountable, make sure they're mm-hmm. doing their paperwork mm-hmm. and,
yep.
and your team members speak so highly of you and
definitely.
And they're so grateful for the work that you do. So I just yeah. want to let you know that mm-hmm. they speak very highly and we hear oh, about it.
We had a how can we keep Holland conversation when her benefits work was ending. It was like, well, how do we keep her?
Like, let's find a way.
Awesome.
Right. And that speaks very mm-hmm. highly of who you are, your mm-hmm. character, your drive,
yeah.
your ability. So thank you so much. We appreciate
yes,
it.
Thank you, Holland.
For those who are interested in finding out all the great work that not only benefits does and employment does and Vic, please check out our website at www.theindependentcenter.org, and you can come visit us at...
You can visit us at 729 South Tejon in Colorado Springs, 80903.
And our phone number is 719-471-8181. And if you're interested in any of those awesome possibilities, just ask for the information and referral specialist, Marita, and she'll get you connected with all the great things at the IC. And hopefully we can, and if you asked to meet Holland, if you've heard this podcast, just ask for her at the front desk and you can meet the person behind the mic.
They're showing us something right now. I don't know what that is.
And they're telling us, so we need to thank Nicole for her flexibility.
Thank you so much, Nicole.
Oh yeah, no problem.
We have enjoyed your perspective. And many times we talk about, you know, what happens from a patient's perspective or a person with a disability's perspective. But we also need to acknowledge that family is there too. And,
yes.
And, you know, when someone goes through something and watches that person struggle, their impact is also there too. So thank you so much, Nicole.
Yeah, anytime.
Thank you, Holland.
Yeah. One last thing. Yes. If you are looking for any of our podcasts, you can find us on YouTube at Real Empowerment. That is our page. Please like and subscribe, or you can find us on Podomatic under the title Real Empowerment.
Thanks so much.
Peace.